Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Campionato di calcio italiano.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Forza Italian Football Podcast. What a weekend of Serie A we have just witnessed. I'm your host, Connor Clancy. I'm joined by Kev Pogzielski. Kev, hello.
Hi, Connor. How you doing?
I'm not too bad, thanks. And I think you know why I'm not too bad, because we have Mr. Vito Doria returning to the pod. Vito, welcome back. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Connor. Yeah, glad to be back. Without boring or depressing our listeners too much, I haven't had the best start to 2021, but just easing back into things now and doing something like a podcast with you guys. We've pretty much been the same trio for about 2 years, I'd say. So really looking forward to doing my first pod for 2021.
Oh, it is great to have you back. I was getting a bit fed up just speaking to Kev all the time, to be honest, Vito. So thank you for returning to chat to us. Guys, we have a lot of big football to talk about. I should say just from the off that we are recording this immediately off the back of Inter's 2-0 win over Juve in the Derby d'Italia. So sorry, Milan fans, but the Monday night fixture hasn't played into your hands this weekend in terms of getting onto the podcast. Milan away at Cagliari on Monday evening, as I said. So let's start with the Derby d'Italia then, Kev. Inter won for the first time in this fixture since 2016. It finished 2-0, but that result flatters Juve, if anything.
Yeah, when I sort of was watching the game, at no point, even though they took a lead that was chalked off offside, I had little to no confidence that Juve were ever getting anything from the game. And it was very dominant for Inter, and there was a touch of desperation about Juventus. I couldn't tell you the actual minute that Inter got their second goal, but it had the feeling of a side one goal behind, really, you know, pushing for a late equaliser, and the other side sort of just breaking away, and sort of the emphatic finish by Barella and the way that the Inter players celebrated like it was game over. And I don't know, somebody tell me, was that like the 57th, 58th minute or something?
52nd.
50, yeah, it was so early, but there was just that air of the game is done. That's how weak a fight Juve put up.
Am I alone in thinking that while I was watching this, it didn't feel, other than the 10-minute firework display that saw in kickoff and the fireworks that reacted to Inter's first goal, this never had the feel of a derby. It felt like it was just Inter against one of the also-rans in Serie A, because Juve didn't put up anything.
It had a bit of intensity to it, a bit like when we saw Milan face Juventus a couple of rounds ago. But it was all on Inter's side, as opposed to two sides going at each other. You know, I say I thought Inter were brilliant to a man. You know, just the intensity of which they approached the game. You know, snapping into recovering the balls, going forward with purpose. But again, it was all on one side.
Well, when I look at this game, I just think that, as Connor was pointing out, that 2-0 does look a bit generous. Inter should have won more comprehensively. And if I'm going to criticise Juventus, and particularly their lack of intensity, I think that played a lot into the Nerazzurri's hands. And also, whenever they had possession, Juve looked very pedestrian and simplistic in their ideas. There wasn't enough variation or great movement as well. It just looked very predictable and they weren't particularly imaginative. With all those attacking outlets, Pirlo should be utilising them better. But in this case, I think Conte really out-coached him, and Inter showed that they're a much better drilled unit.
Do you think this veto was a bit of an indictment on Pirlo as a coach? He's still obviously cutting his teeth. It's still a very steep learning curve for him in Serie A this year, but he was very much dominated by Conte this time.
Absolutely. There have been games where Juventus have really looked a class above the opposition and have played a bit more openly than, say, maybe not like in the Sarri era, but compared to, say, the Max Allegri era, they have had moments where they've been playing some open, a bit more attractive football and looked like that they're a cohesive unit and a bit more pleasing on the eye than usual. In games like this, they've shown that they can be caught out, that especially in the defensive phase, they looked surprisingly disorganised, and they were rather open at the back, even with such defensive stalwarts such as Bonucci and Chiellini. Pirlo would obviously be disappointed with this result, but it also shows that he is indeed raw as a coach, and against someone like Conte, who might not be the most tactically savvy of all coaches, but he is experienced, he is a proven winner, at least in domestic competitions. So here, with his experience, Conte, he showed that he was more aware of the situation and the circumstances than what Pirlo was.
Disorganized sums up their situation on the second goal for sure. Scott Munro, a former writer of FIF and longtime listener of the podcast, tweeted a photo of from way up in the skies at San Siro of the moment where Alessandro Bastoni played that ball forward. And you've got Giorgio Chiellini, I think it is, or no, it would be Bonucci because it's the right centre back, is probably about 10 yards into Juve's own half. So he's playing on Romelu Lukaku and anyone else who wanted to venture forward into the Juve half. No one else is on that side of the halfway line. You know, the other centre back is 5 yards ahead of it. The on the right, another 5 yards ahead of it. It's just acres of space for Barella to run into and score. But Kev, that takes us on to Barella, because he got the assist for the opener and got the goal, and what a goal it was to seal the win at 2-0. But what a performance from him. He's, what, 23? And he is an outstanding footballer, and he showed it on the biggest stage possible this evening.
Yeah, I think I said before, there were so many good performances, it's hard to single somebody out. But for someone of his age, the way at which he went about, you know, his duties, again, recovering the ball, driving the side forward, sort of, I was going to say G-ing up other players, but, you know, they were all pretty up for it. And I nearly used the term star in the making. I think he's been a star for a little while now. And what a signing, really, to, you know, the foresight to see what he could probably bring long term to you. Because let's face it, under Conte, they've had a bit of a habit of picking two thirds of their players up, certainly towards the end of their career. And one of those that we'll probably speak about that got the first goal. I saw you notice something that he did.
Oh my God.
amongst the Juve players pre-game. But if they're gonna sort of, you know, take the title this year, I think Barella is going to be crucial to that.
I completely agree. Completely agree. And yeah, it is tempting to call him a star in the making, right? Because he doesn't quite seem like he's peaked yet either. He's constantly improving. He, I think his biggest forward step has been his discipline. And maybe that's just because he's playing beside someone like Arturo Vidal that his discipline problems aren't noticed as often. But when he was at Cagliari, he was a hothead, you know, and he would do ridiculous things, talk himself into stupid yellow cards and kick people silly. But he seems to have calmed down a little bit now. And yeah, what a phenomenal player. I don't think there's much disputing that he's probably Italy's best midfielder. Between him and Bastoni, Inter probably have in Italy's two hottest prospects on the books there as well. But Vito, a lot of people were bigging up Alessandro Bastoni for that pass to Nicola Barella. But am I alone in thinking that he was trying to pick out Lukaku but slipped and ended up slicing it into Barella's path?
I don't know about that. I just want to appreciate it for what a lovely pass it is, to be honest. And Bastoni, despite having defenders next to him like De Vrij and Skriniar, who are a bit older, a bit more experienced, Bastoni comes across as the one with the most confidence on the ball, in my view. He seems to have more room under Conte to roam from that back line. And I rarely see him really waste the ball. Okay, maybe in the last 2-3 rounds, he's probably been responsible for conceding some soft goals. But if we're talking about this season in general, and even last season, he's become a really exciting ball-playing defender. And yeah, he's another player that really looks like he can go up several levels and improve. But even for what we see of him now, he's already an impressive footballer.
It's crazy, isn't it? Because he's 21, you know, and it's one of these cases where, Kev, I'll let you come in a minute. It's one of these cases where Conte dismissed all of these players that Inter signed from only Sassuolo and Sensi, only Parma and Bastoni, and then only, who was the other one? Barella, only Cagliari in Barella. But what a crop of talent they have there. Kev?
Yeah, because he plays so wide on the left of the three, and because he's so tall and he sort of almost takes up a fullback position, he always kind of sticks out because he's so tall, which is quite rare in a fullback. It wasn't the point I was making. I always find that quite interesting when I'm sort of watching the game that he sticks out. But I wonder, because Juve, even when they play a four, but if one of the fullbacks is pushing forward, they almost split into a very wide three with this sort of central defender. It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they're playing the numbers there, and Conte said, if there's a chance, you know, if they're pressed high on us, if you can release that ball into the gap between either of those defenders, Lukaku's, intelligent movement and speed will allow him to get in that gap. Or if they can get runners like Barella did for the second goal, I would, you know, as much as he slipped while he was delivering the pass, I wouldn't be surprised if it was part of their sort of plan tonight.
Yeah, it might well have been like it was a bit of slice of luck, but the idea was still the same, you know, to get it forward quickly and exploit those spaces. But Bastoni, I remember when he had that season on loan at Parma, I can't remember if it was from Atalanta or if he had signed for Inter and then they had loaned him to Parma immediately. But when he played alongside Bruno Alves, it was amazing the difference he made when he played and when he didn't. And in those early weeks, Bruno would like almost hold his hand through every game and there would be constant communication. But then as the season went on, there was just more of an understanding. Bastoni knew what to do, knew where to be, and he knew how to play. And when he left, Parma regressed. And I don't think it was a coincidence because, I mean, Jacoponi and Gagliolo, all due respect, they're not half the player that Bastoni is, even at, what was he then, 19? Really, really big talent. But this is, I guess, it's a controversial opinion to have maybe, but Alistair McKenzie tweeted, and it's something that I absolutely agree with, which is that this win kind of just shows, Vito, that Inter probably have the most complete squad in Serie A, and you could say, he said, that the title is almost theirs to lose.
Look, I can agree with the assessment that they are the most complete team in Serie A, because they do have the right components for the way Conte sets up the team. After, you know, having to deal with this whole kerfuffle of trying to integrate Eriksen into the team, they've just stuck with the 3-5-2, and with the standard usage of that, they got the players that are suited for it, and it's starting to work again. As for the idea of them being the title for them to lose, look, probably in some parts, maybe because they've tried to integrate Eriksen, that has been a problem. And then, of course, there's Conte's well-renowned stubbornness. So in that regard, you could say that. But at the moment, they're still not leading the Scudetto chase. And AC Milan, with a weaker squad on paper, are still on top of the league. So I think, you know, if it was really Inter's to lose, they would have been dominating the league and then possibly having a slip. But so far, Milan, as a unit, they've been the standout side, and they've been the ones that are truly getting the best out of themselves.
It's the absence of Europe for me. I mean, from here until the end of the season, Inter and Conte have a week to work on every single game, whereas Milan, depending on how far they go in the Europa League, they won't have that luxury. And I think if you gave both Pioli and Conte a week to prepare for every single game, I'd back a Conte side for all his flaws. I would back him in that situation. I mean, he's shown it with Juve and Chelsea, and even with Italy to an extent as well in the past, that's where he earns his money, really. But Kev, Juve, it's just kind of reflective of something that we've already known, right? This Juve team aren't what we've known them to be over the last 9 years. I think Dejan Kulusevski showed more in half an hour on the pitch than anyone else did in the 90, in just that he ran a bit and he moved and he wanted the ball and he looked for the ball. It's just a bit bleak for Juve.
Yeah, it's it's worrying if you're a Juventus fan. It's almost like this has been coming for the last year to 18 months. You wonder if you can almost, not that it's the reason, but you can kind of link it to the sign of Ronaldo. Almost this star over the collective, you know, a little bit what like Milan have at the moment. Juve had this side that had been together for so many years. It had kind of one, let's call it an evolution, when Allegri took over from Conte. And they tried this move to Sarri, different style of football. I think everybody accepted that they were still so strong that a minor blip to performances would still retain the title, which it did last year, but that probably couldn't go on for a second season, which it has. And you just, I wonder whether they could have kept Sarri to almost see them through this sort of period of transition, lumped any loss of the title on him this season rather than throwing one of their recent legendary players under the bus with Pirlo, because as much as he's shown maybe that he hasn't been able to integrate his ideas quickly, he has been given a relatively difficult task, certainly a more difficult task than Allegri had when he took over from Conte. Or I think maybe it was when he took over from Conte, and then if it was the year after that, he lost likes of Pirlo and Vidal, and you know. So yeah, I think we a few of us maybe saw it coming, but this year they've never got off of the ground really. Other than that Milan game, I've not been convinced with them one bit.
No, do you think Sarri's almost sitting at home wherever he is, whatever he's doing, saying, "I told you I didn't do that bad a job," because he won the league with this team, but. Anyway, look, that's just the most recent of the 9 games to have been played. And the first of the 9 was quite something else as well. It was another derby. It was the Rome derby. And, I mean, if we're talking about games that weren't really a contest, this is another one that you've got to throw into that category, Vito, because Lazio played at home in the Stadio Olimpico and they won 3-0. And, I mean, they were gifted two of the goals by some dreadful Roma defending.
Oh, definitely. You can credit Manuel Lazzari, who indeed had a fantastic game, for his perseverance and ability to pounce on those mistakes. But, it showed that with Fonseca, the Roma coach, I mean, he can set up a team to attack. But this game, Lazio exposed Roma's defensive frailties. I don't think it's an individual problem, but just more the system than anything else. The way Roma played, and they had a lot of possession, but it was, you know, meaningless possession of the ball, rather futile. And Lazio were playing on the counter-attack, but they were swift and they were effective. And Lazio have the players that will really do some damage on the counter-attack, and that's what they did. Lazzari had the two assists in the first half, and he had a good hand in the third, which Luis Alberto scored, which was also the Spaniards' third for the game. But even Paulo Lopez had to make two really good saves to really limit the damage for Roma.
Do you think it's a case of Fonseca not being, I don't know, flexible or adaptable? Because like you said, he knows how to set a team up to attack. And it was so straightforward for Lazio. It just took a ball over the top and they were in, seemingly every time. Mm. And Fonseca seemingly did nothing.
Yeah. Well, I think that just that's the thing with foreign tacticians. Don't get me wrong. I do like having them in Serie A because they will encourage a more proactive mindset. Very few of them get lured in into embracing the old school conservative Italian way of playing. But it's still important to implement basic defensive structures and have some awareness of defensive principles. If you can't get your team to do the basic defensive things, I mean, that's a concern. Sure, for the first goal, Ibanez should not have lost the ball to Lazzari like he did. But, to me, it wasn't just errors. It was also the organisation of the defence or the lack of it. So it's important for any coach, regardless if they're Italian or foreign, that if you're going to be playing an attacking style of football, you've got to be better prepared to avoid being exposed on the counter-attack.
As we discussed before we came on, I was quite drunk during this game, but I could have swore I heard someone say that Roma hadn't beaten any of the top nine sides this season. Is that a statistic either of you can...
Kev, you do this every week. You come in with a statistic that we could check before coming on recording, and I always say, you can't spring this on us during recording, but every week you do it again. Well, they drew with Milan, they drew with Juve, they lost to Atalanta, they lost to Lazio, obviously. I can't think of their other results at the moment.
I only say that because you look at them in the table, you know, fourth place, you know, arguably certainly doing better than last season. And you kind of wonder how they got there, and you kind of do get that if you can just pick up 3 points against the sides in sort of the lower reaches of the table. But there was something I saw yesterday online. It's not a statistic, don't worry. Although I can get this one right. It was the third goal, which consisted of 22 passes from all 11 players. And some site, I'm pretty sure I liked it, if anybody's following me on Twitter, sped it up. But the thing that stuck out to me about it wasn't the 11 players involved in the move, wasn't the 22 passes. It was even sped up. It looked like Roma were running and closing down at like normal speed. So what they were doing in real time to go all the way back to Raider and then back up the pitch to score this goal just showed a real lack of effort towards the end of the game when they didn't see a way back.
Can we focus on the positives? Because I think Lazio deserve it, to their credit. And two people, Kev, I want to highlight immediately. Luis Alberto, but I think we might have spoken about him after their win at Parma. But also Manuel Lazzari. What a player and what a signing he was from Spal.
Yeah, well, he makes that first goal. Mm. Just by, you know, I know it's early in the game, everybody go, oh, you know, he's full of energy and he will chase that down. But he does that. He does that for like an entire 90 minutes. He's up and down that flank. He's providing attacking outlet for the Lazio midfield, and he's solid at the back. And yeah, he's been phenomenal since he's been there, really, and a huge part of their early success last season before they kind of had their post lockdown sort of drop in form.
Yeah, the drop is putting it kindly. I think Vito, can we give Simone Inzaghi some credit? The commentary team went big on him. They were saying that he's the most underrated coach in Serie A, and then they seemed to remember that there are quite a lot of good coaches in Serie A. But I mean, Inzaghi has done a fine job there at Lazio.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, ever since he took the job on a permanent basis, especially because Marcelo Bielsa was only there for about 5 days at the most, he's really given this Lazio squad a structure and an identity. There are some, I wouldn't say basic principles, but there are some concepts or ideas that really distinguish Inzaghi's Lazio team. And with the continuity that they've had over the years, it's like that they're really well-drilled and they really know how to get the best out of themselves. And I believe that Lazio's recent successes have been largely due to him, more so than, say, Lotito's spending, you know, whatever he spent, because he doesn't spend a lot, obviously, or Tare's identification of players. I think it's really Inzaghi's tactical nous that has elevated the quality of these players. As for his standing amongst the coaches in Serie A, I reckon he's up there with one of the best. Look, I still prefer Gasperini. I think the way he's really transformed Atalanta in his time there has been incredible, and they play some of the best football in Italy. And Inzaghi, you know, he's up there. Conte, as stubborn as he is, he's still got the record. His records, he's a winner, and although he's got his own way of playing, he's got the silverware. And probably after those three, you've got to give credit to De Zerbi for what he's done with Sassuolo. After Di Francesco left, they've had other coaches, but De Zerbi has made them an attractive team again. And maybe we'll talk about the latest result, but in general, Sassuolo, they're still a top half team and still outside chance of at least getting a European spot, and I think his style of football is a big part of that.
We will come on to the swallow in just a little bit, but before we start dipping down the table a little bit, the game that kicked off Sunday's action was played at the Stadio Diego Armando Maradona, where Napoli beat Fiorentina 6-0. Second time they've scored six at home this season, obviously Napoli having beaten Genoa back in, well, at the beginning of the season. I can't remember what month it was in now. And obviously they hit Atalanta for four there as well. And Kev, you look at this scoreline and you think, wow, that must have been incredibly one-sided. And then you see that Fiorentina had more shots and more possession and think, oh, it was just a case of Napoli being absolutely ruthless.
Yeah, if you'd watched last week's game when Napoli played Udinese and only beat them 2-1, but I think Musso was forced into a lot of saves anyway. I don't want to throw statistics out there that I can't back up. It was one of those where they can go through games where everything they hit will go in, or they will sort of narrowly get by because, you know, a couple of crucial efforts go for them. And again, on the opposite side of that is Fiorentina were terribly wasteful at times. For all of that possession, for all those chances they created, I can only really recall a really good save from Ospina from Ribery, where you thought they looked like A, scoring and getting back into the game. Because I think at that point, it was only 1-0 because Insigne scored so early. And then the two late goals just before half-time sort of kind of put the game out of sight. But it wasn't the performance, if you like, that the scoreline suggested.
Kev, Lorenzo Insigne is a snake.
I saw you were a little bit disappointed that he hadn't handed the...
This is outrageous. It was outrageous. It's not about me, my disappointment. Petagna put his first goal on a plate for him, and then he set up another one, and he's a striker, and you're comfortably winning. If Insigne was on a hat trick, fair enough, Insigne take the penalty. What score was it at that point? It was about 4-0, right? Yeah, it was 4-0. Petagna's not scored. He's played out of his skin, and he's about to go off. Give him the penalty.
If he's been told to take penalties, Connor.
No, I haven't.
He gives it to somebody else, and they miss.
No, I'm absolutely fuming.
So upset.
I'm fuming, Kev, because Petagna was on pens at Spal, and he took them all away. He doesn't miss them. I was absolutely beside myself with anger, because they almost had a penalty earlier, and I thought, oh, give it and just let Petagna take it. And then when they actually got a penalty, I thought, great, Petagna's going to get his goal. But no, little Lorenzo had to be greedy, didn't he? And he couldn't hand over the duties. But Vito, if we're going to stop, if I'm going to stop poking fun at Lorenzo Insigne, we've got to talk about the pass he played for Chucky Lozano's goal. My God.
Well, that was another superb pass. And before that, he actually made a bursting run on the left. So, yeah, just that whole assist in Genoa, that was sublime stuff. It shows that, you know, Insigne, when he's on, he's a superb player to watch. And he can be a very inventive player. I just think that with, you know, playing for Napoli, his hometown club, and sometimes it really depends on the tactics that the coaches have used over the years. Sometimes they probably don't get the best out of him, but when it's his day, he's a delight to watch, and he can be a real difference maker too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to take anything away from the past.
Oh my God.
The run obviously is crucial to it, but that's where I think players that can play on like Insigne's level get really frustrated if they're playing with players that don't make, you know, because they can play that ball, other players that maybe haven't played with players that can do it are hesitant to make that run. And, you know, when everything comes together, you know, these players can shine. It must be terribly frustrating if you've got that in your locker and you've got players around you that can't take advantage of it.
That's why the front three of him, of Insigne, Callejon and Mertens worked so well, because they were always on the same page as each other. You know, it just clicked without them even needing to look. But Kev, I was going to come to you because I hadn't realised Napoli had stopped wearing the Argentina kit until today. When did this happen?
They stopped after Christmas. I remember noting him, I put in my notes, I think the first game back after the Christmas break. But then they did wear it, because they had a kit clash with somebody and went back to the strip. And I don't think it's their official away strip.
Why would it be their...
That is now.
I don't know what their away strip... They usually have a lot of kits. But yeah, Vito has quite helpfully pointed out. Fiorentina wore red.
Well, yeah, because they've got about 15 kits.
Any need for that, though?
No.
Vito's
for many years... For many years, Napoli with the light blue and Fiorentina with the violet or the La Viola was fine. So to put red, not really necessary.
But do they still have the green kit and the white kits? Because they've got those four.
Some,
is it the four regions of Florence? And that's what the colour. I remember when they brought those four kits out, it was the colours for the region that they play in the Calcio style
car. 3 years ago.
Yeah, it was, but then they seem to always have them and you always be playing in various different colours. And I know it's sort of all hark back to that old regional element of the yeah.
I think this season Fiorentina's away kit is white and then the red is their third. Not sure why a team not in Europe needs a third kit, mind, but there you go. Onto a club with four kits, two of them being away. And one of them being worn on Sunday, Parma. They got a point. I almost said another point. They haven't got many. They went away to Sassuolo, who wear black and green, and Parma wore their yellow, Kev.
I told you. Kit fetishes in Italian football.
In this fixture last season, Parma wore their home kit.
Yeah. Well, next year, I think I'm going to log how many different strips, or let's say just shirts, because strips would get crazy. Italian clubs do, because it's definitely the biggest in Europe.
Please do. But look, let's talk about the football, because Parma, I mean, they were without a whole back line. Gagliolo, Bruno Alves, who else? Osorio and Lautaro Valenti were all out. They're probably lucky that Sassuolo were missing Locatelli, Boga, and who was the other one? Berardi. But to their credit, and to Roberto Daversa's credit, really, Kev, Parma set up very, very well, and they kept Sassuolo out until a last-minute penalty.
Yeah, that's what, you know, when the penalty was given, which I didn't see who made the committed the foul.
Maxime Pouzi.
The player was going away from goal, so it was kind of a stupid challenge to make in those circumstances. And you thought, well, okay, Parma haven't threatened too much going forward today, so maybe they deserve it. And actually, you should praise actually the rear guard action of Parma, particularly because they've looked so much of a mess in recent weeks, and certainly doesn't help them now they're down second bottom.
No, I mean, they had a debutant, a 17-year-old debutant whose name I haven't learned how to say yet, so I'm not going to try. It's an awkward one. There's a C and a K and an X in there, and I'm not sure where to begin with it. And then Jacoponi playing alongside him, and then Pouzi, who gave away the penalty. He's young as well, and he's only just come into this Parma side, and I do think it's going to take mistakes like that for some of these players to learn. But I mean, on the positive side, Alberto Grassi was back in the team. Juraj Kutska was starting again. He almost had his head split open inside 60 seconds from big bad Vlad Kirakesh doing what he does, just being terrible at football, really. And then Kutska went on to score with that bloodied head, which I quite enjoyed. I don't know why. There was just something about a man with his head strapped up and blood pouring through scoring a header.
It was a good header, but it is a strange way they've been strapping up these injuries in Italy of late. I saw one, it must have been last week, where they put this fishnet now over the top of their head, as opposed to just the old traditional, just loads and loads of wrapping around.
No, it looks like he's running around with a condom on his head.
Well, if you're wearing a fishnet condom, people, it's not going to work. So, just a warning
from
out there.
From afar, Kev, you pedant. But anyway, a good point for Parma, but given the context of it, Vito, I think this is a game where both teams will feel like they dropped 2 points, oddly.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, indeed. In Sassuolo's case, they'll feel disappointed because they would surely want to maintain a place in the European spots or stay within that fight. And for Parma, since they've brought Daversa back, I'm sure they would want to do all they can to avoid the drop at every cost. It does sound like that with Daversa back, though, the getting their structures back, sticking to what they were known for under the Versa, which was defensive solidarity and hitting teams on the break. So I think in bringing him back, they've just made things easier for the squad, and probably for their sake, maybe better results will follow after this.
I have a theory about Sassuolo that I'm kind of springing it on you guys. I'm not expecting you to have an opinion on it now, because it takes a bit of watching them with this in your head to think about it. I firmly believe that Chicho Caputo, who's the other one, Manuel Locatelli, Gianmarco Ferrari, and Andrea Consigli are all the same person, because they've all got the very same look. I mean, Caputo has the shortest hair of them all, but when you see them all now, it's very hard to differentiate between them. I mean, Locatelli's got a slightly lighter shade of hair, but Kev, watch out for it next time you're watching Sassuolo. They're all the same person, I'm telling you.
Do you think it could be some sort of long-held secret that one of the Sassuolo hierarchy have secretly fathered these children, and they're bringing them back into the bosom of the family without them knowing about it, and they're going to spring it on them at the end of their careers?
Quite possibly. I mean, De Zerbi might have a few questions to answer there, because he's got a similar kind of look going, but he's just not as handsome as the others, really. So, yeah, it's one to keep an eye on. Kev, I'm glad you're firmly on board with that. I didn't know if you would be, but you climbed right up onto this bandwagon with me. So thank you for joining me.
I'd say it's the facial hair.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It is a big part of it, Vito. I'm not going to lie.
I think it's because I watched a documentary over the weekend
Inside Sassuolo.
It was a doctor starting in the 30s, I think it was, and he was doing infertility treatment. It turns out that he was using his own sperm on over 100,000 patients for about 30 years. It's called Baby God. It's very interesting.
What was he doing?
He was using his own sperm in infertility treatment. Administering.
Right. How's he doing that?
Well, he was asking the husband to obviously donate, but he was using his own donation because he knew it was working, and would go and do a sample swap, and the women went away and had children that they never knew were fathered by the thought they were husbands. But
so he had what, hundreds of little kids running around the place?
They reckon it went into the could be tens of thousands. Wow. He did it for 30 years, and we're seeing lots of families in the Vegas area. Anyway,
we've gone off on one there. What's the name of the documentary, though? Because I'm going to watch that.
Baby God.
Baby God. Thank you very much. I'll jot that down and give it a look. Elsewhere in Serie A this weekend, I think the biggest shock came down in Calabria, Vito, where Crotone beat Benevento 4-1. And they were 4-0 up as well until Iago Falque scored in the 82nd minute.
Yeah, it was quite surprising that Crotone won so comprehensively. Benevento absolutely dominated Serie B when they were there together, and the winning margin overall was 18 points. So Benevento won that championship very easily. But this result was completely out of nowhere. Some nice goals from Crotone, especially from Milos Vulic in the second half. That was a lovely right foot strike. But Korda still had to make some excellent saves. The one he made from Perperim Hetemäe was a spectacular one. I reckon if Hetemäe had scored that, that would have been a contender for goal of the season. It was an incredible scissor kick. So I felt a bit disappointed that he didn't score that. But the save from Korda just reminded me of why that guy has been such a stalwart for that side. I mean, he's another guy that, when he's on his good day, Cordaz is a superb goalkeeper. And if Crotone have any hope of getting off the bottom of the table, be because he can pull off some incredible saves.
That dominance shown last year by Benevento has really been seen in their performances this year, I think, in Serie A, because they've had a lot of positivity about their play. So it was really surprising that Crotone got anything from it. But it's brilliant because there's like 6 points separating the bottom eight sides.
It's a lot of fun down there. Benevento, I mean, like you said, they're dominant. They have been by far the best of those newcomers. So to see them get pumped like this against Crotone was quite eye-opening for me. And I confess I didn't watch this game. I chose the wrong one in Sassuolo Parma. So I'm taking your guys' better judgment for this. Vito, Sampdoria won to welcome you back to the podcast. They went 1-0 down to Udinese, thanks to Rodrigo De Paul goal 10 minutes into the second half. But then big Antonio Candreva scored from the penalty spot with some absolute filth. And then Ernesto Torregrossa scored a towering header. I'm sure everyone who speaks a bit of Italian will enjoy that joke.
Yep. Yes. Yep. For those who don't know, his name actually means great tower. So there you go. But it was quite fitting too. I only got to saw the second half of this game. I had a look at one of the Sampdoria fan pages or even the official Sampdoria page on Facebook, and one person posted that the game was being played at a walking pace, and one of the replies was, if football was played at a pedestrian pace, Sampdoria would be in the Champions League for that kind of stuff. But back to this game. Yeah, could have done better on the first goal. I mean, it took the Paul... three bites of the cherry to actually put the ball into the back of the net. But it was a good reaction by the Blue Cercati. Candreva scored with an absolutely delightful chip, and he scored a few of those when he was at Lazio. So it's good that he's still doing it for Ildoria. And the winning goal, that's an excellent example of wing play. I mean, beautiful cross by Augello and Torregrossa with the header. I honestly think that he's an ideal fit for the way Claudio Ranieri sets the team up. And at Brescia, I think with the 4-3-1-2 they were using when he was there, Corini, Grosso and Diego Lopez, I don't think it really suited him, but he still did all right. But I think now with the kind of wingers that Samp have and fullbacks, I think he's going to get much better service, and his stay in Serie A might be a bit longer.
It's interesting that you say he looks a good fit, Vito, because he's one of the few players, well, I don't know a few players, but when I was watching the game, when he came in off the bench, I just thought, he looks like he's been there for forever. Mm. You know, it's rare you see someone sort of come in and look that familiar with his surroundings. And yeah, so I just thought it was interesting you said that.
Well, if we're talking about his movement and all that, he fitted in seamlessly. Just really got into the game, positioned himself well, worked hard for the team. So from that perspective, it was fantastic. On a more lighthearted note, or maybe even a more cynical note, from behind, I sort of felt with his long hair and the way he wore his uniform, he actually reminded me of Edgar Barreto, but I thought he's moving too well and his touches on the ball were a lot better. So I thought, Barreto's gone. It's Torregrossa. So
yeah, sometimes don't do that to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, it's Torregrossa. What a relief. So I had to check my heart a few times.
I put this out on Twitter, and I'm going to run it past you guys as well, because Kev, obviously you're someone who watched Luis Suarez quite a lot in his time at Liverpool, and this is something that I have to say, it's not my own turn of phrase. It came from the Spanish football podcast, Sid Lowe and Phil Kittermalidis, and I think it was Sid Lowe who came up with it, but he always praised Luis Suarez for having a big arse, and I think Torregrossa has that same thing, and not in a literal sense, but just the way he can use his arse to just bump defenders out of the way and get in between the defender and the ball. I think it's a remarkable skill, and he's probably one of the best around at it.
Yeah, certainly I think Luis had a way of, if you like, rolling people off the ball, but also had a knack of sort of running through them at times. As for Torregrossa's arse, I'll let you keep.
I said non-literal.
Keep admiring his posterior, and I'll keep an eye out for it. Okay, sounds like I can't miss it.
That's all I wanted. I need to stress, I'm talking figuratively here. I've not actually noticed. He seems quite a slim guy. I'd be surprised if he had a big arse, but in a figurative sense, he uses it well. Atalanta-Genoa, this was a bizarre game because for 15 minutes, Genoa were excellent going forward. They gave Pierluigi Gollini all sorts of problems. But then for the guts of an hour, they said, all right, we've done our attacking now. We're not going to score, so we'll just try and stop them from scoring. And they camped out on the edge of their box, but they got the job done. And to their credit, Masiello, Perin and co, they did very, very well in this one, Kev.
I said I watched the last 20 minutes and it sounded very much in the commentary that it had been a lot like that for most of the game. And when I saw some of the, you probably call it professional, taking a little shove off of somebody in the air and then rolling around for a couple of extra rolls and then just taking a bit of time to get up, I thought, well, if the whole game's been like that, I'm not gonna bore myself by watching the whole thing. But
no, it was a hard watch.
But you've got to do what you've got to do. You know, they're down there. They're in a fight. They're in a fight every season, Genoa. It's a great point for them. I'm sure Vito would agree. He's loved it.
He looks happy, doesn't he?
he looks happy.
Why did they bring Ballardini back? If he wasn't there, Atalanta would have won 6-0. I don't know. 10-0.
Is that not
something?
Is that 5 points from 9, though? Ballardini,
I think he's picked up points in 4 of his 5 games. But again, you've just kind of lumped that on us in the middle.
Definitely won last week, and I thought they drew the week before.
Yeah, they did well in midweek against Juve in the Coppa Italia as well. So he does seem to have turned them around for now. Because look, it's his fourth stint in charge of the club. We know how it ends. He turns them around for a bit, then it becomes awful. Then he has a fight with the president, he gets sacked, and then he comes back in a year. Just let it run its natural course, Vito. You don't need to worry too much. You'll probably win the next derby and you'll be laughing again.
If we win.
I've got to say, or ask, Kev, were you watching when Josip Bilicic went off?
Yes.
That was amazing. Yes. Right? What was that?
We turned over and Stace, my wife, everybody, was going, what's he doing? I went, wow. I said, it's a bit like when you used to watch me play and I'd be sent off and then I wouldn't walk far enough away from the line and then they'd ask me to take my shirt off because apparently I was sort of disrupting play. I'll tell you what, it's I was going to be cruel. I was going to be really cruel, actually. I don't know how this... I always used to kind of call referees sort of bullied school children or whatever, or failed footballers. And I think that was just an element of just he's walking off, just let him go. You know, he was standing there, wasn't he? He was trying to sort of see the last
annoying the linesman
minute, you know, of the game, and it's like he's doing nothing. It really doesn't affect play all that much. And the referee, it's almost there was the last sort of midweek rounds when Nandez got sent off for Cagliari, and the ref insists. You know, the ref is going to walk back to the middle of the pitch. So walk to the player, tell him what you've got a problem with and book him. Don't stand there and waste everybody's time for 3 minutes and demand the player walks to you. And it was a bit like that. And it frustrates me on both parts because Ilicic can just be the bigger man and actually start walking away. And the ref can just turn around and because it's a couple of minutes left. Just to let
But in this case, he did, right? Because he got taken off and he stood beside the linesman trying to say, you know, that was our ball. You know, that was our ball. And the linesman was ignoring him. So then the ref said, right, go away. So he stepped over the advertising board. And then the ref was still telling him to go. And he was like, well, you can understand his point of view, right? Because with the new substitution things, you have to go off at the nearest point of the pitch. So he did that. So now it's not up to him anymore. So then the referee was given out. So he took his shirt off. And then the referee was still giving out. So he tried to climb into the stands. He got up onto the second advertising board. And he was just sitting there like, there's nowhere I can go here.
See, that's where I got confused. Because I think I must have taken my eye off it. Because then I saw him sat on the advertising hoardings again.
That was the second one.
I didn't realise there was a second one. So I thought, is he coming back on? Are we now going to... This would be. I was going to say classic Iličić, but because he's a little bit, you know, he's one of those playmakers. You know, they've always got a bit of an edge to them. You know, and he's found this form. You know, he's been phenomenal the last couple of weeks, and then he goes and punches a referee or something and gets himself a 10-game ban. But didn't happen.
Still didn't happen. It would have been funny if it had, but yeah, I mean, Iličić isn't the guy you want climbing over fences either. His nickname is the grandmother, because his body just isn't cut out for sport. You don't want him climbing things. Gasperini must have been having a heart attack watching that happen. In the other games of the weekend, Bologna beat Verona 1-0 in what I would consider to be a surprise result, Vito, but Verona have slowed down just a little bit recently.
Look, with them, yeah, they're not always going to be consistent because they've had big changes to their squad, and you know, as great as Ivan Juric has been doing with that team, you can't expect them to be performing at a consistent level. As with Bologna, they did win thanks to that Orsolini penalty, but they're another side that on the day they're capable of getting results. So I think at this stage, at least with Bologna, they should be grateful that they managed to get another win on the board. As for Verona, I think it's a slip, but for them, it's not also the end of the world. I mean, once they get back to the Bentegodi, I'm sure they'll be in there getting a result and capable of getting a win, albeit, you know, not by a comprehensive margin.
That was Bologna's first win since round 9.
They're dreadful.
I had to look that up because I thought to myself, they haven't won for ages. Wow, it was week 9. Then I looked at the table. They're 12th. How are they still 12th? But it's just because they've been picking up draws everywhere. And it will save you if you're a struggling side picking up those draws. You know, we just discussed Genoa getting a point at Atalanta. And it can save you.
Yeah, it's depressing though, isn't it? Like, because
very.
It's just grim. But Kev, they've only drawn 5 games, Bologna.
Well, maybe most of them come in that last sort of little spell.
Yeah.
That's what's done it for me. Those, you'd think a team that hasn't won for what would be now 9 rounds of game or 8 rounds of games for today would have fallen further.
Mm.
But you know, I quite like Mihajlovic, to be honest. I like him a lot of his coaching appointments. And obviously he's been through a fair bit. And I love the city of Bologna. You know, I mean, we discussed that when I went there a couple of years ago. But so yeah, I'm not too anti the fact that they're doing this, but it was a bit surprising that it's taken them that long to get 3 points.
Don't get me wrong, I don't want them to get relegated. If them and Parma both got relegated in the same season, with Spal having been relegated last year, I'd probably have to move. Because it's just Sassuolo left and in Emilia Romagna. So please, Parma, Bologna, do not fall into Serie B. Please, please, please. The other game of the weekend that was played was, of course, the last one we're going to talk about because it involved Torino. They drew 0-0 with Spezia. And Marco Giampaolo Vito very much looks like he is on his way out of the Stadio Olimpico Grande Torino now.
It looks that way. Davide Nicola has been linked with the job and is likely to be his replacement. And although I do feel a bit sorry for Giampaolo, I think at the end of the day, it is about results. And also with this Granata side, I'm not convinced that the players are really playing for him. There have been times where his ideas have come across a bit, but I think this team is so used to counter-attacking football and the players are workmanlike. I reckon that maybe if they do get Nicola, they might be a bit more responsive to him and they might be able to survive. But for Giampaolo, I think this is a huge blow to his career because he had a setback with Cesena nearly a decade ago and then he had a rather mysterious time at Brescia, so should we say, and he had to rebuild his career again. But now, if he's going to get sacked from this, I don't think he's got much of a Serie A career left.
They play for 82 minutes with an extra man.
Yeah.
And they did not have a shot on target. That is a damning statistic for that performance. And it wasn't, you know, they weren't playing against a 10-man Juventus, 10-man Milan. They were playing a newly promoted side with 10 men for 82 minutes. Shocking.
Mm.
Absolute shocking.
And Sirigu saved them from losing too. And probably losing comprehensively. So that's even scarier.
They're bad, aren't they? I think Torino, and just the talk of Nicola as well, reinforces this opinion because he's obviously one of Preziosi's recent mates. I think Torino are just becoming Genoa.
Probably not as outrageous. Or
no, I mean, they've got good strikers in Belotti. Genoa always have good strikers. And the rest of the team is just nowhere near as good as it should be. I think it's Genoa all over. Anyway, like I said at the top, Cagliari play Milan on Monday evening. Kev, why are you laughing?
I was just going to say, but unlike Torino, Genoa don't have a much larger city rival. Sorry, Vito.
I'm not going to acknowledge it. I'm not going to bite. I'm just going to let that sit. Guys, it's time for the game. Milan play Cagliari on Monday evening. We're not talking about it because it hasn't been played yet. So, Milan fans, pipe down. You got your team's music as the outro last time round. Right, so I've not got a clue what the scores are, when we last played, who we've used in the game. We'll try and regroup when there's an international break. So it'll be chaos until March and then we'll try suss it out. Kev, I'm going to let you go first this time.
Thanks.
What do we do? 2 minutes? 2.5 minutes? 2 minutes.
Yeah, let's go. Let's
all right. 3, 2, 1, go.
Is it a foreign player?
It is a foreign player, yes.
Do they play in the north of Italy?
They do play in the north of Italy. You've changed your approach, which is quite interesting.
Yes, I know.
I've planted the seed in your head now, haven't I?
I was tempted. You have. do they play for either Milan club?
They do not play for one of the clubs in Milan. Vito, it's over to you.
Do they play for any of the Turinese clubs?
They do play in that city, yes.
Is it a Juventus player?
It is a Juventus player, yes. Oh, Kev, you're in trouble already. Look
okay.
At this.
Okay.
He's back in it.
And I've got a lot of foreign right. players, to be fair.
Fair call. All right, is this player a midfielder?
He is a midfielder, so Vito's going to smash you, Kev.
Okay. Is it Dejan Kulusevski?
It is not Dejan Kulusevski. No.
Is he even classed as a midfielder, Vito? Okay.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Yeah.
I would have him as a midfielder, but I'd wince when you
answer. Yeah, midfielder forward. Yeah, with him. So, sorry.
Is it, are they North American?
They are not North American. Or... No. That was a strange way of just saying, is it Weston McKennie? Vito.
All right. Okay. Is it Aaron Ramsey?
It's not Aaron Ramsey. Kev, is this is amazing.
Is it Bentancur?
It's not Rodrigo Bentancur. Vito.
Rabiot.
No, neither of you deserve to win this.
Arthur.
You have 20 seconds left.
Arthur.
No.
Oh, God.
Jeez.
Oh, my God.
Who are these foreign midfielders and we can't get it?
7, 6.
Oh, we should be ashamed.
3.
Sami Khedira?
He's got it with a second left. It's Sami Khedira. Vito has won with a shot.
Almost certainly had Sami Khedira already.
Drama. Do you know what? It was going to be Adrian Rabiot, but then I opened the Juve squad and I saw Khedira and I thought,
he's still in.
Yeah. No, he was still there. Let's do him.
I'd like a steward's inquiry because I think we said there were, you know, you had to ask a question at a certain time, and Vito delayed for a long time before I could sort of
all
follow
right,
up Brandon. Anybody. Just saying.
What's happening here?
I don't think that's an issue of my age. I think that's an issue of me being.
Now, Kev, if you want to get all pedantic and say that you would have had a chance at winning that, I'm just going to throw back at you. 1, your record in this game. And 2, the number of opportunities you had to win it.
Well, yeah. I didn't name foreign players that didn't play for you, though. You know, I was close.
Congratulations. although in Sami Khedira, Vito kind of did, didn't he? Name a player that doesn't play for Juve. But anyway, we're finished. Guys, we will speak to you. Do you know what? I don't know what's happening anymore in my life. I don't know where the next podcast is going to be recorded or when. But next Sunday evening, I might be at Parma Sampdoria. So we might speak to you after that. We will record on Sunday evening anyway, whatever happens. And we'll be with you on Monday morning. Goodbye, Vito.
Bye, Connor.
Goodbye, Kevin.
Ciao, ciao.
Yes, goodbye from me.
Brilla una stella che in tutto il firmamento è sempre la più bella, ed ogni volta che rintocca il campanone ho voglia di cantare questa canzone. Lazio sul prato verde vola, Lazio tu non sarai mai sola. Un'aquila nel cielo, più in alto sempre volerà. Insieme a te Aquilotto noi voliamo via, la domenica sempre ci fai compagnia, con le bandiere al vento e un tuffo in fondo al cuore, sono brividi forti e voglia di gridare, perché il coro che fa dice Lazio sei grande, te volevo bene. Lazio sul prato verde vola, Lazio tu non sarai mai sola. Vola un'aquila nel cielo, più in alto sempre vola. Verde vola,
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.